This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Good evening again. This is Jerry O'Connell.
And Bernie O'Connell on this beautiful day. Jerry, what have you got for us?
Okay, the first item in the opinion page for USA Today is entitled USC Fails Valedictorian's Free Speech Rights, written by Ingrid Jacques of USA Today staff, who we hear from frequently. She says, things are not well on America's college campuses. The disgusting anti-Semitism that seems only to be building in campus administrators' lackluster response has led to some truly frightening displays. Violence and rule-breaking behavior must be not be tolerated, period. Yet, higher education leaders cannot make an unsettling time an excuse to censor perfectly fine speech just because they fear a difficult situation. That's what happened at the University of Southern California when the Los Angeles school decided last week to cancel valedictorian Asna Tabassum's commencement speech in May, the first time that USC has prevented its top graduate from speaking at the graduation ceremony. College officials claimed they were concerned about the, quote, alarming tenor that had taken place on social media after Tabassum was named valedictorian. The ongoing Israel-Hamas war in Gaza has led to increased tensions in the United States following Hamas' brutal attack against Israel on October 7th. Valedictorian was accused of, quote, anti-Zionist rhetoric. Detractors were displeased about Tabassum's support of Palestinians and accused her of, quote, anti-Semitic and anti-Zionist rhetoric. The intensity of feelings, fueled by both social media and the ongoing conflict in the Middle East, has grown to include many voices outside of USC and has escalated to the point of creating substantial risks relating to security and disruption at commencement, the provost Andrew Guzman said in a statement on April 15th. Continued, this decision is not only necessary to maintain the safety of our campus and students, but it is consistent with a fundamental legal obligation, close quote. Following controversy over the decision to prevent Tabassum from speaking, USC has since doubled down by canceling appearances of other speakers and honorees. Not only is USC's decision an affront to free speech, it's also fundamentally unfair to Tabassum, who undoubtedly worked hard in her years at the university to earn this achievement. She shouldn't have this experience taken from her. In a statement, Tabassum said she is surprised that USC, quote, abandoned her. Now, Tabassum may well have repugnant personal views, and her speech may stoke division on campus. Even so, her accomplishments should not be undermined because of fears of possible violence in a speech she likely hadn't even written yet. Rather, the university should have committed to keeping her and others attending graduation safe. And if it knew of a tangible security threat, it should be upfront about that. The Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression faults USC for how it handled this situation. While USC is a private university, it commits to First Amendment-like free speech, and FIRE points to how California law requires private, secular colleges and universities to give students the same speech rights they'd have at the state's public institutions. Quote, implicit in the idea of a campus committed to robust expressive rights is that administrators won't censor their students just because they have controversial views, close quote, Fire said in a statement. Meanwhile, administrators at private Adrian College in Michigan are handling their own controversy in much better fashion. They're pretty much ignoring it. Last month, Adrian College announced that Riley Gaines would be its commencement speaker on May the 5th. Gaines, who is often described in the media as a, quote, anti-trans rights activist, is a lot more than that. She is an accomplished former NCAA competitive swimmer who became well known after she tied transgender swimmer Leah Thomas in the 200-yard NCAA freestyle championship race in 2022. Following that experience, Gaines has become an outspoken defender of fairness in women's sports and speaks frequently on the issue at universities around the country. USC should learn from Adrian College and reverse course. Gaines is used to attracting pushback and even violence on campuses, so it's probably no surprise to her that there are factions of the Adrian community who aren't happy that she will speak at the school. A student LGBTQ+ group started an online petition urging the college to, quote, disinvite Gaines. It now has more than 1,600 signatures. But the college isn't backing down. Quote, Adrian College has never shied away from presenting and debating substantive disagreements on campus, close quote, Adrian President Jeffrey Docking said in a news release last month. And continued, in fact, this is precisely the purpose of universities, to engage in civil discourse of controversial issues. We welcome Riley Gaines to our beautiful campus, and we feel confident our students will be inspired by her commencement address, close quote. I hope Docking and her fellow administrators stay firm in their commitment. And even though it may be embarrassing for USC to backtrack, it should reinstate valedictorian Tabassum as a speaker at commencement. More than ever, college students need examples of what free expression really looks like. And the author, Ingrid Jacques, is a columnist at USA Today. And you can contact her at jjacques@usatoday.com or on X, formerly Twitter, at Ingrid-Jacques, J-A-C-Q-U-E-S.
The next item is titled, I Found a Love for Women's Sports Because of Caitlin Clark. The author is Sarah Pequeño of USA Today. I would never call myself a sports person, and I'm not athletically gifted. I'm too short, too bow-legged, and too awkward. I don't get excited about the Olympics and spent my college years at the University of North Carolina missing basketball games by working instead. I hear they have a good team. Recently, however, my attitude toward sports has changed. Like most good things in my life, that's thanks to women. I'm one of the casual fans who has been swept up in the frenzy over women's basketball, fed in part by Caitlin Clark's ascent to household name. I'm also from the South and felt it was my duty to cheer on the University of South Carolina Lady Gamecocks when my friends and I squeezed into a Brooklyn one-bedroom to watch them win the Women's Basketball National Championship this month. 18.9 million viewers for the Women's Basketball Championship. I couldn't tell you the most interesting place of the game, but I could tell you what I felt watching as South Carolina coach Dawn Staley broke down on camera, surrounded by the team that helped her get a third national title as head coach, after an undefeated season. It was the feeling I had been waiting for, the feeling that keeps sports in our collective conscience and keeps fans coming back year after year. This feeling, I think it's called being a fan, has continued into the month as I've watched respective moments from both Clark and Staley. I watched Clark take on Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update host, Michael Che, for his misogynist jokes at the expense of women's athletes, where she took time to uplift other basketball players who paved the way, including the Gamecocks coach. I heard Staley praise Clark, now an Indiana Fever player, for elevating the game and growing viewership numbers. It's actions like that, to me, that makes this moment so special. There's a reason why tickets to the women's Final Four games cost more than the men's side. There's a reason that viewership for the women's basketball championship surpassed the men's final with 18.9 million viewers to their 14.8 million. Game attendance affects how female athletes are treated. There's a reason you can't go online without seeing Clark's face or hearing mention of the WNBA draft, whose 2023 season also saw a spike in viewership. The reason is Clark. But it doesn't change the fact that the entire sport should have been getting more recognition for years. The fact that women's sports have been treated as secondary to the men's teams for so long is thanks to generations of misogyny. It shouldn't take an uncomfortable comment from a sports journalist or a player opening up about their working conditions for the rest of us to realize that women still aren't receiving the respect they deserve. This lack of support affects game attendance, which in turn affects the working conditions of the players. It's why the United States women's national soccer team had to go to court to earn annual salaries, comparable to their male counterparts, despite winning 4 World Cups and 4 Olympic gold medals. It's why WNBA players have spoken up about the conditions they travel and play under, and it's why Clark, arguably the most talked about basketball player of the past 2 years, is starting in the league, making a fraction of what the first pick in the men's draft will receive in their first contracts. It's not fair that female professionals in their field are not being paid comparably to men. It shouldn't matter that it's occurring outside of what we call a typical profession. We might be experiencing another spike in popularity before the frenzy dies down. Every few seasons, it'll feel like we've made strides in popularizing the wildly inoffensive idea that women's sports deserve the same enthusiasm and fair pay for their enthusiasm that the men receive, only for reporters and advertisers to move on after the season ends. We've seen it before with the 2019 Women's World Cup. So let's put our money where our mouths are. Women's sports don't have to be a niche community. I'm happy to be here and want others to hop on the bandwagon. These games can be for everyone. They just need the support of the sports media landscape and the advertisers. We've already seen how this can create household names. We only have to look to athletes like Simone Biles, Serena Williams, and Megan Rapinoe. All of them have name recognition because they are both phenomenal players and have become fixtures on our screens thanks to advertising. For me, I hope to keep the momentum going by catching some New York Liberty games in the upcoming season. I hope you look into tickets for your local WNBA team as well. We could all stand to put our money where our mouths are and keep feeding the excitement around women's sports. Everyone deserves to be able to watch a team they care about with people they care about. And I've realized it's good for the soul, regardless of what gender is wearing the jerseys. You can follow the USA Today elections columnist Sarah Pequeño on X, formerly Twitter, at Sarah, S-A-R-A, dash, dash, Pequeño, P-E-Q-U-E-N-A-O, and Facebook, facebook.com/Pequeño Writes.
Okay, let's move over to our Moneyline column. And the first short blurb here is entitled, Eras Tours Tickets Cheaper Internationally. An explanation of that says, the Swifties, who want to snag tickets to Taylor Swift's colossal Eras Tour, know the experience won't come cheap. This year, the billionaire will only visit three U.S. cities, Miami, New Orleans, and Indianapolis. For the October 18th show in Miami, cost of a single ticket ranged between $1,615 and $8,524 on StubHub.com as of Wednesday. So, how else can fans see one of the world's biggest singers? Go abroad. In the past 30 days, searches for, quote, Taylor Swift Europe Tour 2024 tickets have increased by 300% in the U.S., indicating that some people are ready to take a long-haul flight, according to travel website Islands.com. Concertgoers who head to Europe for their Swift experience may actually save more money in the long run. Not only are ticket prices across the pond cheaper, but many European cities, like Warsaw and Lisbon, are also budget-friendly, offering inexpensive food and lodging. The next item says, Tijuana Flats Tex-Mex is closing 11 restaurants. The Central Florida-based restaurant chain Tijuana Flats has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy and will be closing 11 of its restaurants, according to a release from the company. One location in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and 10 Florida locations were closed in Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, and Boynton Beach. A Tijuana Flats spokesperson confirmed to USA Today, as of Monday, the fast casual Tex-Mex restaurant chain operates 65 locations throughout Florida, along with 26 franchise restaurants in Florida, Alabama, North Carolina, and Tennessee. Next item says, Ford recalls over 450,000 vehicles for a battery. Ford is recalling more than 450,000 vehicles in the United States because of an issue that could affect the battery, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration said in a notice published Tuesday. The recall affects certain 2021 through 2024 Bronco Sport and 2022-2023 Maverick vehicles. The NHTSA notices says dealers will recalibrate the body control module and powertrain control module free of charge. Owner notification letters are expected to be mailed May 31st.
Well, I'm not sure this is the next item, but it looks good to me. U.S. economy's growth slower than expected. The gross domestic product increased by 1.6% for the first quarter, down from 4.1% in second half of 2023, the report said. This was written by Paul Davidson of USA Today. The U.S. economy slowed more than expected early this year as weaker business stockpiling and exports offset solid consumer spending in a flurry of housing construction. The nation's gross domestic product, the value of all goods and services produced in the U.S., expanded at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1.6% in the January to March period, the Commerce Department said Thursday. That's down from robust growth of 4.1% in the second half of last year and the lowest reading since spring 2022. It's also below the 2.5% gain projected by economists in a Bloomberg survey. But the pullback was caused chiefly, by businesses that replenished their inventories more slowly and feeble export growth, two volatile categories that don't reflect the economy's fundamental health. Final sales to private domestic purchasers, which excludes those elements as well as government spending, grew a robust 6.1%. That illustrates there is still a lot of positive underlying momentum, said Paul Ashworth, an economist with Capital Economics, who wrote this in a note to clients. Since late 2022, the economy repeatedly has defied forecasts of a sharp pullback or recession, shrugging off the Federal Reserve's aggressive interest rate hikes and the inflation spike those high rates aimed to tame. The disappointing growth last quarter could soften the views of Fed officials who say they're in no rush to cut rates following an acceleration in consumer prices in the first 3 months of the year. Yet any concerns about flagging growth could be blunted by the strength of the economy's pillars, consumer and business spending. As recently in late March, the Fed was still predicting 3 rate cuts in 2024 as annual inflation slowed from a 40-year high of 9.1% in mid-2022 to about 3%, according to the Consumer Price Index. But that was before the March index report, released earlier this month, revealed a 3 straight uptick in price gains, leaving inflation at 3.5%. That's well above the Fed's 2% goal. Some analysts believe Thursday's weaker-than-expected report signals the start of a broader slowdown in the economy. That trend, along with a resumption of a more rapid deceleration in inflation, could allow the Fed to plow ahead with multiple rate decreases, some forecasters say. Ian Shepherdson, the chief economist of Pantheon Macroeconomics, acknowledged that last quarter's slowdown in growth can be traced largely to inventories and exports. But he added that consumption is also starting to wobble a bit. Is consumer spending rising? Consumer spending, which makes about 70% of economic activity, has underpinned buoyant growth. Consumption grew a solid 2.5% earlier this year, following a 3.3% gain in the fourth quarter. The rise, though, was driven by an increase in spending on healthcare and financial services. Purchases of goods, including cars and gasoline, declined. Shepherdson said the 2.5% increase in spending was less than the 3% economists expected and below the recent trend, heralding a sharper drop-off in the months ahead. Americans' ability to open their wallets in recent months has surprised some analysts because pandemic-related savings have largely run out, especially for low- and middle-class households. Credit card debt is at record levels, while delinquencies are historically high. But employers have added a booming average of 276,000 jobs a month, 276,000 jobs a month this year. While wage growth has moderated, average pay still rose 4.7% annually in March, according to the Atlanta Fed's wage tracker. That's giving many Americans the wherewithal to splurge, especially now that pay increases are outpacing inflation. Shepherdson, however, expects job growth to slow significantly. It's a close call, but we still see a path to the first Fed rate cut in June if payroll gains slow substantially and inflation eases, he wrote in a note to clients. Will the U.S. go into recession in 2024? Well, pessimists are becoming harder to find. Before Thursday's report, forecasters estimated the gross domestic product would grow a solid 2.4% this year, and they figured the odds of recession had dropped to 30% from 60% last May, according to a survey by Wolters Kluwer, Blue Chip Economic Advisors, in early April. So what's the market doing right now? Well, stock markets tumbled after the report. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 521 points in midday trading, and the Standard & Poor 500 Index fell nearly 1%. Besides reacting to the slower-than-expected growth, markets responded to the news that the Fed's preferred inflation measure ran hotter than expected in the first quarter, echoing the Consumer Price Index. The Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index rose 3.7% annualized, higher than the 3.4% economists had forecast. That means Friday's Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index inflation report will show us faster than expected acceleration in prices for March. How other parts of the economy performed? Well, let's look at it. Housing helps power growth. Housing construction and renovation surged 13.9%, the most in 3 years, and the third increase after 9 straight quarterly declines. Okay, many homeowners aren't selling their houses because they don't want to be hit with a much higher mortgage rate for their new home. That's causing a dire shortage of existing homes on the market and prodding builders to put up more single-family houses. Housing construction also has been juiced by the prospect of Fed rate cuts this year, which led to a decline in 30-year mortgage rates from about 8% last fall to 6.6% early this year. Recently, though, mortgage rates have topped 7% as resurgent inflation has sparked forecasts of few rate cuts. Business investments grew 2.9% after rising 3.7% the prior quarter. Outlays for computers, delivery trucks, factory machines, and other equipment rose a modest 2.1% as companies faced higher borrowing costs. Spending on buildings, oil rigs, and other structures dipped 0.1%. Businesses added to their inventories more slowly or drew them back after replenishing them briskly the previous quarter, reducing growth by 0.35 percentage points. Such stockpiling has been volatile and doesn't typically reflect the economy's underlying health. Companies heavily stocked up in 2021 in response to supply chain snarls and product shortages, leading to big swings in past couple of years. Government outlays rose 1.2%, down from 4.6% the previous quarter, and the weakest showing in nearly 2 years. State and local purchases have been bolstered amid a wave of infrastructure and clean energy projects spurred by sweeping federal legislation. But revenue has declined in recent quarters as economic growth has gradually slowed after a post-pandemic surge, and the federal government's pandemic-related aid to state and local governments has been running out. Whew. Yes, that was a lot of information.
So our next item is entitled, Homes Near Top Schools Are Costly. Subtitle says, those in the best districts are 86% higher than average, written by Medora Lee of USA Today staff, who says, the high cost of education begins long before kids start college, a new study shows. When parents look for a home to set down roots, they often seek the best public school districts. Those homes tend to cost more, nearly $300,000 more on average, according to children's equipment manufacturer Chico, which analyzed Zillow home values with niches rankings of best school districts across the U.S. The average U.S. home value is $353,748, while the average for the best district in every state is 86% higher at $651,662, the study said. It's interesting, quote, how strong the correlation between home values and school ratings is across the country, said Kyle Beierlein, who works as a research assistant with digital marketing firm GoFish on behalf of Chico. Continued, the significant increase is found from coast to coast. The top five states with the steepest premium to live in their top school districts, according to Chico, are Texas. You'll have to pay 486% more to dwell in the Eanes Independent School District in Austin. The average Texas home fetches around $293,824. But homes in the Eanes District on average are $1,721,000. Next is Missouri. The Ladue School District in St. Louis commands a 346% increase from a state average of $234,834 to $1,047,091. In Connecticut, Westport School District homes go for about $1,630,823, 332% more than the state average of $377,247. In California, Palo Alto Unified School District gets a 308% premium. The state's overall average home value is $743,435. But buying into that coveted school district might cost you $3,030,407.
Now, I bet you wonder, where does Ohio fit in all this? And guess what? We do have that information. So, Jerry, let us hear about Ohio.
Parents must pay a 198% premium to access the Indian Hill Exempted Village School District in Cincinnati. An average Ohio home is valued at $213,149, but buyers looking to live near the top school district will pay about $635,473. Homes near the top-rated elementary school cost 65% more than a state's average home, while homes near the top-rated high schools cost about 45% more. So, on average, it costs a bit more to live near a given state's top-rated elementary school than it does its top-rated high school, Beierlein said. The states where you pay the biggest premium to live near the best elementary school, the study said, are Connecticut, To live near the state's premier elementary school in New Canaan, you'll pay 359% more for your home. The state average hovers around $377,000, but those who want their kids near the best school in the state must prepare to pay closer to $1,352,000. In Massachusetts, while homes in estates cost $585,000 on average, that skyrockets to $2,033,000, which is the highest in this study, when you get near the top-rated elementary schools in Weston. That's a 247% premium. And in Tennessee, the average home is valued at around $305,000. But in Brentwood, near the state's top elementary school, are 245% higher at $1,054,000. The best high schools won't take you far from the state's average home price, but the premium's still hefty, the study showed. Here are the top three states with the largest premiums. Kansas, for a spot near the state's top-rated high school in Overland Park, you'll pay 182% more than the average $213,000 Kansan home, or about $635,000. In Delaware, the average home's value at $371,000, but those near the top-rated high school in Wilmington are closer to $957,000, 157% premium. And in Washington, the average home price is $562,000, but it is 182% higher, or $740,000, near the state's best high school in Redmond. Can I get near a great school without paying so much? Well, yes. There's a handful of states where you can pay less than a state's average home prices to get near the best schools. For the best school district in New Mexico and Maine, you can pay 46% and 44% less, respectively, than a state's average home and live in the best school district, the study said. In Colorado, you'd pay 29%. Quote, in places like Maine and New Mexico, the top-rated school districts are farther away from larger metropolitan areas, which could be one reason why home values are lower there than the state's average, Beierlein said. For the best elementary school, North Carolina gives you the biggest discount, 58% less than the average home. Oklahoma and Florida round out the top three at 36% and 28% less. For the best high school in Maine, you can get away with paying almost 72% less than the average home in that state to live near the state's best high school, and 54% less in Mississippi. South Carolinians can pay 45% less than the state's average. Quote, in many states, the best high schools and elementary schools are located within the best school districts, but that isn't always the case and could be another contributing factor as to why some states actually experience lower home values near their top-rated elementary or high schools, Beierlein said.
The next article is titled, Medications and Coping Plans Can Help Fight Seasickness, by Nathan Diller. Mackenzie Pollock had a feeling she'd get seasick on her first cruise. And for someone like me, folks, I get motion sickness just sitting in the back seat of a car, so I can't imagine what it would be like to go on a cruise. So I'm all with Mackenzie Pollock. The 29-year-old Oregon resident tends to get carsick, so when she felt nausea on a Caribbean sailing with Princess Cruises in February, it wasn't a surprise, and she came prepared. Pollock talked to her doctor before the trip, who prescribed scopolamine patches. She also stocked up on bonine tablets after seeing videos about it online. I'm a librarian, she said. I do copious amounts of research on everything. There were days here and there during the 20-day trip when she felt sick. like when they went in and out of Florida and sailed through a thunderstorm. But between the two medications and other coping strategies, like sitting on her suite's balcony, she was able to manage it and enjoy her time with family. Getting seasick can put a damper on a cruise, but there are ways to keep it from ruining your trip. So why do people get seasick? Well, that's a question I've always wondered about. Seasickness is a form of motion sickness. That happens when there is a difference between the information you get from your visual system, your inner ear, and receptors in your muscles, according to Dr. Kathleen Cullen, a professor of biomedical engineering at Johns Hopkins University. In a cruise ship cabin, for instance, the surroundings might appear stable, even while the vessel is moving. And this mismatch between what your visual system is experiencing and what your balance organs are telling your brain about how you're moving is sort of an alert signal to your brain that something is wrong, said Cullen. So it's a sensory conflict that actually is a big problem. Motion sickness symptoms can include nausea, dizziness, and vomiting. Some travelers are more vulnerable than others, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Those include kids between 2 and 12 years old, and people who have a history of migraines, vertigo, and vestibular disorders. Pregnancy, menstruation, and taking hormone replacement therapy or oral contraceptives have also been identified as potential risk factors, the health agency said on its website. On the other hand, people older than 50 are less likely to develop it, and toddlers and infants are usually immune. What is the worst cruise for seasickness? While modern cruise ships have stabilizers that reduce their roll, some itineraries are more prone to choppy waters. If you're doing a transatlantic over to England, the North Atlantic can be pretty gnarly, especially in the winter, said Rusty Pickett, a travel advisor and owner of Shellback Cruises. The Drake Passage, a feature of many Antarctic expedition sailings, is also notoriously treacherous. Where is best cabin to stay in to avoid sickness is what you must be thinking. The bow of the ship tends to bounce up and down, said Pickett. Lower in the ship, middle and just aft of middle, minimizes the movement, he added. Booking a stateroom with a window so you can keep an eye on the horizon or getting fresh air, like Pollock did on her balcony, could also be helpful, Cullen said. But I want to stop being seasick on a cruise. So how do I do that? Travelers can bring medications and other remedies with them. Prescription scopolamine patches can help get passengers over the hump, Cullen said. There are also other over-the-counter medications like Dramamine. Those can make users drowsy. Yes, I'm well familiar with that. Travelers should talk to their doctor about their options ahead of their cruise. Ginger candies or ginger ale, made with real ginger, and acupressure wristbands may also be helpful. After you board, Cullen recommends watching the horizon on the ship's outer decks. That's a pretty good way to keep yourself initially from getting motion sick, if you're prone to it, she said. The CDC offers other suggestions, including lying down, closing your eyes and sleeping, limiting caffeinated and alcoholic drinks, eating small portions of food often, and not smoking. Well, are there any other options out there? Well, cruise ships generally have onboard medical staff that can treat a range of ailments, and Pickett said the vessels keep a supply of seasickness medication on hand. During an Antarctic expedition I took with Aurora Expeditions in December, Crew members also placed barf bags around the ship that passengers could grab if they felt sick while outside their rooms. Pollock said feeling seasick didn't put her off cruising, and she and her family planned to take another. It was frustrating when it happened, but it didn't overshadow the trip at all. Oh, that's great. What's the next article, Jerry?
Well, let's move on to our 50 states, I think. Got a few minutes left. We'll go to Ohio. Columbus says, Ohioans may have to wait longer to know exactly what hospital services will cost them. A bill to make hospitals publish the actual prices of their services passed the Ohio House in June with strong bipartisan support. But a Senate committee introduced significant changes, which advocates say may have gutted the legislation. Louisville. Louisville code enforcement officers will start randomly inspecting rental units citywide June 1st to ensure all landlords are providing quality, safe housing for their tenants, Mayor Craig Greenberg announced. And from Indianapolis, the Indiana Department of Education is reviewing the teaching license for a former Indianapolis Public Schools teacher after allegations that he orchestrated a, quote, fight club-style disciplinary system in his classroom came to light. Okay, let's go back to Birmingham, Alabama. The Birmingham Zoo last week welcomed the birth of a healthy female giraffe. This marks the first baby giraffe born at the Birmingham Zoo since 2014. Juneau, Alaska. The U.S. government rejected an emergency request from 100 tribes and communities in western Alaska for a zero bycatch limit on salmon, which would have effectively halted the nation's largest Bering Sea pollock fishery. Phoenix, Arizona. Public school students shouldn't have to share a shower room with students who were born of the opposite biological sex. State Republican lawmakers agreed. But Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs saw it differently. She vetoed Senate Bill 1182, casting it as a, quote, attack on Arizonans. Fayetteville, Arkansas. The University of Arkansas will be receiving a more than $540,000 federal grant from the U.S. Department of Transportation for a project that aims to revitalize Pine Bluff, Arkansas, Democratic Gazette reported. San Francisco. A San Francisco restroom, once estimated to cost $1.7 million, is now up and running for the public after the city received criticism, jokes, and a generous donation. San Francisco Recreation and Parks opened the single public restroom in the No Valley neighborhood after receiving a donation that cut the city's costs to under $200,000, the agency's communication manager said. I think a picture of that restroom made all the papers here a couple of days ago. Yeah, pretty fancy place. Denver. Colorado Parks and Wildlife is so serious about telling people about the harmful effects of feeding wildlife that the agency has created song parodies to catch people's attention. The musical spin-offs of popular songs Another Brick in the Wall and Never Gonna Give You Up are being used to educate people about the importance of keeping wildlife wild and the problems associated with feeding wildlife. Hartford, Connecticut. The Democratic-controlled General Assembly approved a 2.5% general wage increase for the bulk of state government's workforce, about 46,000 state employees, many of whom also would receive a step hike in the coming fiscal year, the Connecticut Mirror reported. Millsboro, Delaware. An unmarked grave has been found at an active construction site in the Long Neck area of Millsboro. District of Columbia. An investigation is underway to determine the cause of a fire at a 113-year-old home, the WUSA reported. Tallahassee, Florida. A poll by Florida Atlantic University and Main Street Research may encourage Florida First Lady Casey DeSantis to mull the possibility of being elected as the state's first woman governor. Asked who they would prefer as their next head of state, the survey of Florida Republican voters has Casey DeSantis besting other options, including U.S. Representative Matt Gaetz. Atlanta, Georgia. Governor Brian Kemp signed into law the latest in a number of controversial state bills imposing restrictions on minors' internet use. State Bill 351, effective January 1st of 2025, requires parental consent before allowing minors to create social media accounts. It also mandates verification on pornography sites by requiring users to upload a government-issued photo ID before allowing them to view adult content. Honolulu. Police said 5 people were arrested and 11 citations and 3 warnings were issued for trespassing on Haiku Stairs Trail, Hawaii News Now reported. Boise, Idaho. 8 county officials have launched a first-of-its-kind ballot verification system in an effort to increase trust in elections, the Idaho Press reported. In Springfield, Illinois, there soon might be a change in the process of receiving a teaching license in Illinois, thanks to new legislation. House Bill 5057 would allow the State Board of Education to create a content test for those seeking to teach first through sixth grade. Des Moines, Iowa. Iowa officials are working to restart a long-shuttered notification system for domestic and sexual abuse victims who have protection or no-contact orders against their abusers. Topeka, Kansas, Governor Laura Kelly signed a bill that allows school districts to use 1 of 3 methods to establish enrollment, using the current year, the past year, or the average of the past 2 years. Lafayette, Louisiana. Donald Trey Bishop, who is 16, lives by the motto, "Go out every day and change the world." That motto helped earn him the honor of being a 2024 Louisiana Young Hero, a program celebrating young people who have excelled in academics and public service. Maine. Police have arrested a man accused of stealing numerous cars across southern Maine and the New Hampshire seacoast. Salisbury, Maryland. The city has responded to concerns about PFAS or PFAS contamination in its water supply, saying it currently meets all quality regulations required by state and federal agencies. Provincetown, Massachusetts. 10 Atlantic white-sided dolphins were released off Provincetown Tuesday night after stranding on the mudflats in Wellfleet. Detroit. The Justice Department said it would pay nearly $139 million to settle scores of claims made against it involving allegations of sexual abuse involving former Michigan State University sports doctor Larry Nassar. Minneapolis. The University of Minnesota's Medical Board celebrated the Center of American Indian and Minority Health Expansion's grand opening this week, NPR News reported. Jackson, Mississippi. Bellhaven University is the first college in Mississippi to pair with Amazon to offer a new data science curriculum. Columbia, Missouri. After spending time in exile, the Museum of Art and Archaeology and the Museum of Anthropology are home at the University of Missouri campus in the lower level of Ellis Library. Helena, Montana. The Montana Department of Agriculture announced that it is now accepting applications for the department's Student Loan Assistance Program. Qualified farmers and ranchers could receive grants equal to 50% of their outstanding student loan debt. In Lincoln, Nebraska, the Caregiver Tax Credit Act, sponsored by Nebraska Senator Elliot Bostar, creates a non-refundable tax credit for caregivers that covers about 50% of eligible expenditures used for the care of family members each year. The bill passed unanimously on the second to last day of the session. Governor Jim Pillen signed it Tuesday. Reno, Nevada. Despite intense pressure from Nevada's congressional delegation and local officials, the U.S. Postal Service announced it is going ahead with plans to move Reno's mail processing operations to Sacramento. Concord, New Hampshire. Following hours of emotional testimony, the New Hampshire House Education Committee voted against a bill to prohibit transgender students from playing on the sports teams of their preferred gender identity. The Education Committee voted to send Senate Bill 375 to interim study, politely killing the bill. Trenton, New Jersey. A top business lobbyist in New Jersey has floated the idea of dedicating any increase in revenue from the state sales tax to New Jersey Transit as an alternative to the controversial corporate transit fee that Governor Phil Murphy has proposed to help the beleaguered agency improve its financial picture. And from Santa Fe, New Mexico, New Mexico's biggest urban center and an oil field county ranked among the top air polluted areas in the U.S., according to a national study.
Well, that does it for this this Friday. Hope to see you next Friday. Have a great weekend. And this is Bernie O'Connell.
And Jerry O'Connell.
Saying bye-bye.